Welcome, everyone, to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. This is Corinne, and as we usually do, let's come together for some brief moments, turning within in silence. To that space of love that we all share. And taking a nice deep breath in and out. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. Whatever it is that we need, we place our trust in the Holy Spirit, as the Holy Spirit will provide. And with that love in your heart and light in your mind, coming together to our perception of right here, right now. All right. So let's dive right in. We are in the Sparkle Edition on page 226. The subheading is Magic versus Miracles. In the original edition, it's Chapter 9, Part 10, also called Magic versus Miracles. If you have a hard copy of the book, it's page 189. And last but not least, in the Foundation for Inner Peace edition, it's page 187. Chapter 10, Part 4, it's called The End of Sickness. Here we go. All magic is a form of reconciling the irreconcilable. All religion is the recognition that the irreconcilable cannot be reconciled. Sickness and perfection are irreconcilable. If God created you perfect, you are perfect. If you believe you can be sick, you have placed other gods before him. God is not at war with the god of sickness you made, but you are. He is the symbol of willing against God, and you are afraid of him because he cannot be reconciled with God's will. If you attack him, you will make him real to you. But if you refuse to worship him in whatever form he may appear to you, and wherever you think you see him, he will disappear into the nothingness out of which he was made. So I'll pause there and see if anybody had anything come up as we were reading that paragraph. This is a big one for me. I kind of feel like I had a big day today. It's sort of been building up for a while now, where I feel like I fully committed to looking at all of the unconscious beliefs and conscious fears that I hold in my mind still, and I completely committed myself to looking at them with spirit. And I actually used an exercise out of Nook Santos's book, The End of Death, that really helped me with this today. And this wording about the god of sickness and what this paragraph, actually a lot of this section is about, really resonates with me. So when it says all magic is a form of reconciling the irreconcilable, what comes to mind for me is, and I'm speaking from my own experience here, my pattern has always been to, I'd say my biggest hook, my biggest ego hook has been fears of sickness and, you know, concern for bodily symptoms and just all about, you know, the body and making sure that the body stays safe. And magic is when we take one example of magic, at least, is when we take responsibility for the body's health and wellness instead of seeing it for what it really is and placing and really asking for our perception to be healed and placing our body under I think the Course calls it Christ control. I believe Christ control is what we can place our body under, and Christ guidance is what we can place our mind under. And so with magic, we try to problem solve apart from the Holy Spirit. We try to, you know, use something outside of ourselves and give that power to heal us. And so magic is a form of reconciling the irreconcilable. It's saying that if God created you perfect, you are perfect. Sickness and perfection can't be reconciled. So until we place both of our feet in the Holy Spirit's camp, which is that we are perfect, if we still harbor beliefs in sickness in any form, we're still split, and we're gonna be inconsistent, and we're not going to truly heal because we're still placing other gods, which is our belief in sickness, before God, before the fact that we are perfect. So that next sentence, if you believe you can be sick, you've placed other gods before him. And this is so funny for me just coming up today, because when I was doing this exercise with just listing out a lot of my fears, essentially, was what I was doing and looking at them, you know, the ones that I could identify that still felt real to me, I went through each one and looked at each one with spirit, and it was so funny. I got so tired. Like, first of all, I got hungry, had to go to the bathroom, had to get up, had to get a snack, you know, had to get a drink, then finally sat down and started doing this. And then when I started doing it, it was like the urge to zone out and just not fully grasp what I was doing, and the fatigue came up so strong. The ego did not want me to look at any of this. So it's just so funny, because that, again, is you know, that to me was evidence of just showing that, you know, I even believe that I'm capable of being tired if I'm experiencing myself as being tired. So that became something to look at with spirit too. So it was kind of fun and kind of funny. So I'll pause talking there and see if anybody has any comments or questions. So the
yeah, this
then.
Is Yogi.
Oh, hi, Yogi.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, it's so funny that this is the Course, because this is everything that you're saying. It's like the Holy Spirit is like, you're just mirroring what I'm dealing with right now.
Mm.
And, you know, and I've never put my trust in, you know, even though I am a healer, I teach different forms of yoga, different forms of meditation, I now have taken a break to look at some things that are really going on with me and in my body. And the biggest thing I'm dealing with is how much my looks have changed, because my jaw, for years I've had TMJ, my jaw, my teeth. And it's like the one little hook I still have is my teeth. And I never cared about my teeth, or I never really cared about my looks. And it's connected to my body, because I can see how the kidneys relate to the teeth that I'm having the problem with, or the liver or whatever. But it's like this obsession with my health, with my body. And I asked the Holy Spirit to help me with this about a week ago, and I got, I'm not a body, I am free, I'm still as God created me, meaning that I'm spirit, and so therefore I have the ability to think in a way that would create a miracle, instant healing. But it's like there's a part of me that's stubborn, that doesn't really want to heal, and there's like a real war going on inside of me. And then the Holy Spirit just said to me, the sickness, you're holding on to the sickness, because as long as you're sick or you're not well, there's guilt. So I've just decided, okay, before I came on the phone, I thought, well, maybe I'll get some relief. So you're talking, so... So, yeah, and I didn't know what magic meant. So when you just said about magic, I thought, okay, all right, the Holy Spirit wants to release me from this, because there's a part of me also that believes that I've seen so many miracles in my life, so many, and I have And I'm one of these people that study the course, but I still believe, I still do yoga, several hours of yoga a day because I teach it, and I, you know, I have a great Rolfer. I've got to go see my dentist, you know, I got to go, all these different things. So for me, it doesn't mean that I would not get the help while I'm in the dream. There are people that love me and want to help, but it's this hook that I have. It's just like a hook. So I appreciate what you said. I'm done.
Oh, thank you for sharing. You know, a couple things come to mind, and one of them, too, is that we don't have to feel guilty about going to the doctor. We don't have to feel guilty about going to the dentist, and it's all because we have to be where we're at, and it's, you know, there's, like, everything, anything that we do, it's either we're going to do it alone, which is with the ego, or we're going to do it with spirit, and you know we have to be where we're at. So if we're going to go through it with the ego, that's going to keep us nice and pretty much set in our closed system loop, and you know not we might seemingly have a physical symptom that gets better, but real healing isn't happening. If we go, you know, to the doctor or get whatever, you know, testing we need to do, but we consistently still take that to the Holy Spirit. We still take it and look at it with the Holy Spirit because, you know, it is all a form of magic, but we have to be where we're at. And we can only, those things only, we can't force those things to fall away. We can't, you know, if and I've been in this position before where I'm like, all right, well, I'm deciding this time I'm just not going to run to the doctor, and then my fear builds and builds and builds. And great, you know, like that is a form of self-correcting. That's me trying to do the Holy Spirit's job for me. Instead, it's my job to just do what I feel compelled to do, to be where I'm at, and to, you know, still bring that situation to the Holy Spirit and be willing to look at it differently. The related thought that came up for me when you were speaking, Yogi, was that again, with my body being, you know, and like sickness, fears, health, you know, that sort of thing, being one of my biggest hooks, that question, you know, do I want this physical symptom to be healed, or above all else, do I want my perception to be healed? Because if I want the physical symptom to be healed and I do what I have to do to make that happen, I'm still problem solving away from, apart from spirit, you know, I'm still taking matters into my own hands. If I want my perception to be healed, that's acknowledging that there is nothing outside of me that can cause anything. Instead, the cause is in my mind. And so with my perception healing, with me taking my perception to spirit, and above all else, wanting my perception of the problem to be healed, that's where real healing can happen, because all sickness, all, you know, anything, all this, this whole thing that we're experiencing is coming from my mind. So above all else, I want my perception to be healed, because that's where it's all coming from. It's all coming from my split mind.
Yeah, thank you very much for saying that. Yeah, and I've just been beating up on myself, you know, and I realize, you know, I do have to go to the dentist, you know, to get my gums taken care of, and I do have to go get my teeth fixed, and I do, you know, mm-hmm. still have to see my chiropractor. And for years, I just never did any of those things, and now at 54, all of a sudden, everything has just come down on me, you know, mm-hmm. like, and I don't know, I think I was listening to Gary Reynard, and he said, you know, he said that the Holy Spirit will take the form of a teacher or a guide, and I also feel the Holy Spirit can take the form of a good doctor,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know?
The Holy Spirit will speak through anybody that will, you know, if we're too blocked to hear the Holy Spirit directly, the Holy Spirit will speak through others. So it's funny, just to give an example of that, because I was speaking with somebody at one point in time about a procedure that I had to have, and this person, I felt like at one moment was speaking spirit, because they were really prompting me to just, you know, follow through and be where I was at and go for it. And then in the next minute, they immediately switched into their ego, and they were like, and it's going to be painful, and it's going to hurt. And it was just so funny. So you know, everybody, what they're speaking to us is a reflection still of that, you know, if they're speaking Holy Spirit and ego, it's that, it's reflection of that split that we have in our own mind. But I do resonate with you, you know, that the Holy Spirit can speak through others. Very much so.
That sentence, oh, sorry.
Oh, no, I was going to say anybody else. DJ.
Oh, I was going to say the sentence about all religion is the recognition that the irreconcilable cannot be reconciled. That was really, like, just reading that. You know how you read the course and sometimes you forget about certain parts? That one never really stuck out to me until now, but, like, it's really profound. Like, that is really profound because I remember growing up and like, going to so many different, you know, like, religious groups and spirituality groups, and I ended up finding a faith group that I was most comfortable with probably in my 20s, and it was I want to say this because I don't have judgment attached. That's not what I'm getting at. But I wanted to find like a group where I felt like everything was accepted, like whether it be, you know, Christianity, Muslim, Buddhist, whatever, Sikhism, you know, just everything. And I felt like I found that, but there was always this peace, like, that there were rules to be followed to be loved by God, or that there were certain groups of people that weren't always accepted. You know, like the gay community was always a huge one for me. Like, even though I found a group that was accepting of all different religions, there was always this, like, taboo thing about, like, you know, that lifestyle was labeled wrong, and I never liked that, but I kind of, you know, tried to find a group that accepted everyone as much as possible. And it wasn't until I found the course that I really felt that I found, like, okay, this really accepts everybody. Does that make sense? And
now
reading this sentence is, it totally makes sense. Like, that's why religion cannot reconcile what you're looking for. That's why. Because religion can't reconcile that.
Right. Awesome. Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah, I was, and to jump on, you know, to add to what you're saying too with that sentence, for me, it makes me think that, so if magic is a form of reconciling the irreconcilable, magic is a substitute essentially for the love of God, for healing. So religion is the recognition that we can't substitute anything for God, that, you know, this substitution, this world that we made doesn't substitute for God. We can't.
Right, and that's always been, like, one of my hugest pet peeves about, like, organized stuff is, like, I felt like it was less about, you know, the truth of God and more about, like, trying to put labels on things and trying to organize things and trying to, like, compartmentalize things, and that to me is so far removed from what God and spirituality really is.
Yeah.
That it always, like, there was this little piece of me that was, like, completely irked by little things, like little rules that you're not supposed to break to be loved by God, or
right,
or because God doesn't make up those rules, we do.
Right.
So it just always seemed insane to me. Like,
Oh, thank you, DJ. Yeah. That was awesome. You know, I just want to highlight another sentence, too, from this paragraph before we move on, because I have it underlined. It was the last sentence, actually. But if you refuse, this, again, is talking about the God of sickness. If you refuse to worship him in whatever form he may appear to you, and wherever you think you see him, he will disappear into the nothingness out of which he was made. So that's where... to me, again, the vigilance with, you know, in my case, with my biggest ego hook being, you know, symptoms and thoughts about, you know, concern about the body, it's about taking all of it to spirit, even all those little subtle fleeting thoughts, even when earlier, just how I gave you the example, when I was sitting there, you know, looking at the remaining fears in my mind with spirit, and then this like overwhelming tiredness, feeling like I had to go take a nap came up. I almost, you know, was like, oh, maybe I need to go take a nap. And then it was like, wait a second, I'm going to look at, you know, I'm catching this too. So there was that, you know, God of sickness trying to pop up again. So it's about leaving nothing for the ego to you know, use for its own behalf. It's about taking it all to spirit also. Let's read the next paragraph too. Reality can dawn only on an unclouded mind. It is always there to be accepted, but its acceptance depends on your willingness to have it. To know reality must involve the willingness to judge unreality for what it is. This is the right use of selective perception. To overlook nothingness is merely to judge it correctly, and because of your ability to evaluate it truly, to let it go. Knowledge cannot dawn on a mind full of illusions because truth and illusions are irreconcilable. Truth is whole and cannot be known by part of a mind. So I'll pause there and see if anybody has anything to add or share. Reality depends on our willingness. Reality depends on our acceptance to and willingness to have it. It's always right there. But we can either keep it at bay, which we do probably a lot of our waking day through where, you know, we put our allegiance in terms of, you know, listening to the ego. But again, that tiny bit of willingness is all we need. And I know all of us are on, you know, that path of having that tiny bit of willingness. And the Course is so clear that that's really all we need. Yeah. This makes me think, too, of how the Course refers to the proper use of denial, the sentence where it says this is the right use of selective perception. So it's about looking past what isn't really there. And again, as we always emphasize, it's not about doing that by ourselves. So we can look at something and be like, oh, that's not real, and just dismiss it. And that's a very I did that for a long time. And, you know, perhaps there's some usefulness there too, but it is, you know, me again taking the Holy Spirit's job into my hands. It's our job to give it to the Holy Spirit, and the Holy Spirit sees past it for us as we embody that Holy Spirit's perception. Let's read the next paragraph. The sonship cannot be perceived as partly sick, because to perceive it that way is not to perceive it at all. If the sonship is one, it is one in all respects. Oneness cannot be divided. If you perceive other gods, your mind is split, and you will not be able to limit the split, because the split is the sign you have removed part of your mind from God's will, and this means it is out of control. To be out of control is to be out of reason, and the mind does become unreasonable without reason. This is merely a matter of definition. By defining the mind wrongly, you perceive it as functioning wrongly. This is kind of a big paragraph. I want to pause first to see if anybody has anything to share, add, or ask first about this. So So starting with the last sentence, this really strikes me. By defining the mind wrongly, you perceive it as functioning wrongly. So think of all the times that we perceive a problem. You know, we perceive, and again, I'll use my own experience as an example, let's say, you know, with anxiety or even with, like, let's say a bodily symptom that then, you know, starts to freak me out because that's my pattern. I have defined the mind wrongly. I'm seeing myself wrongly because I'm seeing myself as Corinne, as a body, and I'm obviously going to misperceive them. One of the things that comes up for me reading this, and it came up for me when I read the first sentence, the sonship cannot be perceived as partly sick because to perceive it that way is not to perceive it at all. If we see sickness, and this, I'm using Nook Sanchez's words here, we're hallucinating. She said, I don't remember her exact context that she was saying in her book, but we're hallucinating when, you know, we are seeing sickness or seeing problems or seeing even ourselves as bodies. So that just makes me laugh because, you know, if we see that, it kind of brings some humor back into it for me, at least, to be like, oh, you know, to just acknowledge for a minute that we're hallucinating, because it's a misperception, and it's a misperception that, again, can be corrected if we have that willingness to turn back to spirit instead.
You know, once again, it seems it's delusional because we're not in the moment. Mm-hmm. When we perceive it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And really, if you're not in the moment, you're not thinking with God.
Right.
And that's where all trouble arises.
Yeah, yeah. I love that lesson. It just escaped me. But it has to do with, like, my real thoughts are in my mind. I would like to find them. We've talked about this before, Paula, with, you know, these aren't our real thoughts. The thoughts that occupy the surface of our mind, that chatter, that, you know, busy preoccupation, our real thoughts are beneath that. That's not who we are. And we get into a lot of trouble when we identify with, you know, that chatter, that small self-talk, lowercase s, self. That was just coming up for me as you were speaking.
Just always seems to come back to this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You consider it natural to use your past experience as the reference point from which to judge the present, yet this is unnatural because it's delusional. So that's always the problem, but it's not so easy to recognize that.
Right, right. It's not.
When it's happening.
And that's why we need a guide out of this.
Yeah. And I think that's why we have this book uses so many words to describe the same situation. We need to see it from so many different angles, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Lisa said something really cool at the retreat that I went on.
Uh-huh.
And it was about the body, and she said, anytime you're identifying yourself as a body, you're identifying yourself with the past, because the body is never in the present moment. It's like whatever your past projections are have created what your body is experiencing or whatever is going. So, yeah. I thought it was pretty cool.
I love that, and that's really funny because I just read something along those lines, and I'm not going to be able to find it, but it was just talking again about how this has all been over and done with, and the only reason we're still experiencing it as now is because we want to, you know, we're choosing to, right? We're not letting it go. And so when you said that the body is in the past, that that resonated for me.
She also said, and this is really profound, but it was like, you think you're here, like you think you're here, but you're not even really here.
You know, I said that to my older daughter this morning, who is in no way, shape, or form in on a spiritual path, and she didn't bat an eye when I said that. You know, we're really not here at all, and she didn't bat an eye. And it was almost like she really understood that.
On some level,
I think we realize that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Awesome. I also like the sentence too that we just read, where it says, talks about our mind being out of control because we've removed part of our mind from God. To be out of control is to be out of reason, and the mind does become unreasonable without reason. So that, to me, explains why this world is so crazy. You know, I've often thought, like, gosh, like, is this just, like, you know, chaos? But this is clearly saying that it's because we removed part of our mind from God's will, and so it's out of control. It's out of reason. And so it is unreasonable without reason. Again, we're all insane. Only we as course students own it and are willing willing to let that be undone. Okay, next paragraph. God's laws will keep your minds at peace because peace is his will, and his laws are established to uphold it. His are the laws of freedom, but yours are the laws of bondage. Since freedom and bondage are irreconcilable, their laws cannot be understood together. The laws of God work only for your good, and there are no other laws besides his. Everything else is merely lawless and therefore chaotic. Yet God himself has protected everything he created by his laws. Therefore, everything that is not under them does not exist. Laws of chaos are meaningless by definition. Creation is perfectly lawful, and the chaotic is without meaning because it is without God. You have given your peace to the gods you made, but they are not there to take it from you, and you are not able to give it to them. To me, this paragraph just makes me think that we're just learning to remember the laws of God, the laws of love. We've known them. We've just chosen to forget them. And so this course is here for us to help us find our way back to remembering those laws and to build our trust in them again, too, as we experience those miracles. Anybody have anything to add or ask or share?
Oh, well, see, now, the laws of God being what?
Love. That you are
okay.
Love.
Yeah. And that's it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is it. That really is it.
And that's just a decision away.
It is just a decision away. Perfect. You're absolutely right. I love that.
Yeah, that really simplifies it because you're either choosing for that or you're...
Mm-hmm.
Delusional.
Next paragraph. You are not free to give up freedom, but only to deny it. You cannot do what God did not intend, because what he did not intend does not happen. Your gods do not bring chaos. You are endowing them with chaos and accepting it of them. All this has never been. Nothing but the laws of God have ever operated, and nothing except his will ever be. You were created through his laws and by his will, and the manner of your creation established you as creators. What you have made is so unworthy of you that you could hardly want it if you were willing to see it as it is. You will see nothing at all, and your vision will automatically look beyond it to what is in you and all around you. Reality cannot break through the obstructions you interpose, but it will envelop you completely when you let them go. I love that last sentence. That's where, again, so reality cannot break through the obstructions you interpose, but it will envelop you completely when you let them go. So, again, that puts the responsibility into us, that we've interposed those obstructions. And so it's our responsibility to take each one of them to Holy Spirit to let them go. And reality, that awareness of reality, the awareness of truth, that love will envelop us completely when we let them go. So it makes me think then, too, just to go back to my earlier example of, you know, sharing, you know, my biggest ego hooks, those obstructions, it's almost like, you know, there's an addictive component to them in that, you know, those are the things that are the hardest for me to let go of because I don't want to. I somehow, in some sort of sick way, you know, have some sort of attachment to those obstructions because I think they're something. But they're actually nothing.
It's that willingness to just detach from those thoughts when you're experiencing them or thinking them, and then the feelings that come with those thoughts that are not in alignment, and just really just detaching from them and just letting them be exactly what they are. Mm-hmm. Kind of experienced that this weekend. And I just wanted to be happy, period. You know, and I think that willingness is a big part of it. I just wanted to have a good day. And uh-huh. I was having some thoughts that were bringing up feelings and emotions that were very uncomfortable. And I just thought to myself, you know, I'm just going to let them come, and I'm going to let them go. And I'm going to feel whatever it is they bring up in me, and I'm not going to resist this. Mm. And I tell you, I had the best day. And I was really surprised in a way that could be processed so quickly. And again, it's with the Holy Spirit, because I know I can't do that.
Right.
I can't. But when you detach with the Holy Spirit, you know, with that intention of allowing the Holy Spirit to let those, you know, take them away from me, get those thoughts away from me, and it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, that is.
But I think it starts with that intention. I want to do God's will for me today. I want to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
I deserve to be happy. That's his will for me. That's not just some silly thing.
Right. I agree with you. It does begin with our decision of how, and there's a part of the course that says it's called Rules for Decision, and it goes through steps to basically decide for happiness. It says something to the effect of, you know, one of the steps is like at least we can decide that we don't like how we're feeling right now.
The first rule there is in the obstacles to peace is your willingness to get rid of it.
That's
and that's That's where it starts, your willingness to get rid of it. And I'll be darned, I just was not willing to be unhappy. I just really wanted to have a good day.
Awesome. I really like to just this first sentence where it says, you are not free to give up freedom, but only to deny it. So that to me, again, puts that responsibility on us, that reminder that we're simply denying what is already there, what is still there, what hasn't changed. Like Yogi said earlier, I am as God created me. I think it was that one. I am as God created me. His son can suffer nothing, and I am his son. We still haven't changed a thing about our reality, even though we're wildly hallucinating right now. Okay, next paragraph. When you have experienced the protection of God, the making of idols becomes inconceivable. There are no strange images in the mind of God, and what is not in his mind cannot be in yours, because you are of one mind, and that mind belongs to him. It is yours because it belongs to him, for ownership is sharing to him. And if it is so for him, it is so for you. His definitions are his laws, for by them he established the universe as what it is. No false gods you attempt to interpose between yourself and your reality affect truth at all. Peace is yours because God created you, and he created nothing else. I love that.
That's another one of those paragraphs that I'd like to have tattooed.
To the inside of your eyelids?
Really? Really, that is, that's wonderful.
Yeah, it is. I love how it says ownership is sharing to him. So that, again, to me, just really paints that picture that everything, if you think, you know, of our ideas of God, of being love and joy and peace, that if ownership is sharing to God, that what we think of, those, that's our inheritance. That's who we are. And nothing we do here, again, this is sort of what we were saying before, where it says, no false gods you attempt to interpose between yourself and your reality affect truth at all. So any difficulty, whatever it may seem to be, that, you know, we are believing in more than the love of God, not even that, nothing can affect truth, no matter how big the problem may be, or may seem to be, I should say. Next paragraph. The miracle is the act of a son of God who has laid aside all false gods and who calls on his brothers to do likewise. It is an act of faith because it is the recognition that his brother can do it. It is a call to the Holy Spirit in his mind, a call to him which is strengthened by this joining. Because the miracle worker has heard him, he strengthens his voice in a sick brother by weakening his belief in sickness which he does not share. The power of one mind can shine into another because all the lamps of God were lit by the same spark. It is everywhere and it is eternal. That's also a delicious paragraph. And it again points to the fact that the sole responsibility that each of us has is to accept that undoing of fear in our own minds. And simply by doing so, we are weakening others' beliefs in sickness and other false gods, that we, as we accept the atonement, as we accept that undoing, we don't share those beliefs. Those beliefs for us start to fall away, and so we're weakening those beliefs for all. And that's how
is that weakening the beliefs in the collective mind?
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
We as A Course in Miracles students focusing on this material actually helped to cause that shift in the collective mind?
There's only one ego, and there's only one Son of God, and we're it, or we're that one Son of God, and the ego is, you know, nothing, and we experience,
right?
We perceive separate egos, but there's only one, and so as we do our little part, we are absolutely contributing to the whole.
Well, that's a wonderful thing, isn't it?
Isn't it? Because then, you know, like our brother's progress becomes our own. If we seemingly perceive that, you know, we think somebody else is doing really good, their gain is for us too. And we help out. It's like we're, you know, helping one another up the ladder.
It's like the butterfly effect, right?
Say more about that, Tony.
It sends like a whole wave through the sonship as my mind is healed,
mm-hmm.
because there's only one of us here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it is like a wave.
Like a what?
Like a wave. Like, you know, as you choose for truth, it's like a giant, you know, shockwave of love that
yeah.
just reverberates through everybody. And, you know, whether or not people perceive it doesn't matter because it's there. And so it'll be ready for them to perceive it when they're ready. It'll be there waiting.
I totally believe that because I think that's how I have experienced this whole shift. I think that's how I came to the Course in Miracles, in a sense.
It's like we're polluting the planet with our, like, it's like a psychic pollutant. Like, so all of my negative kind of thoughts are polluting the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And so as we clean up our own junk, we clean up the collective junk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's wonderful.
It is.
So I have can you hear me? This is Yogi.
Yes.
Yeah, I have a question, and it, you know, I don't know, each time I ask it of other people, other course students, they sort of gloss over and say that none of it's real, but my question is with the environment and things like, you know, the polar bear and all sentient beings, whether, you know, animals are extremely, I think there's so many animals that I've met that are awakened beings,
mm-hmm.
but all of us are, would animals be considered part of the sonship too? And the earth, because the earth has her own consciousness and she's evolving too.
You know, that's a good question. And I can see how, you know, other course people that you've asked have said it's all, you know, just, it's all not real. But with God being in everything, because God is in our mind, I don't know the solid answer to that question. My, you know, there's parts of the course that say, you know, the way that the world is going to end is that it's going to end being a place of love and peace, because it's before that been a place of pain and, you know, suffering. It's going to end in joy, and it's going to merely cease to seem to be. So I do think that animals have egos too. I only say that because I've seen it in my pets. and so I think that, I think, you know, as we do our own part, I can't help but think that that is going to be, you know, reflected out there in the picture that we see. I think we can get easily stuck when, again, we sort of make that the goal, because the goal isn't about making the world okay. The goal is about waking up from the dream. And not just in the dream. That was one of the things that Nook Sanchez really helped me to see in her words, that it's, you know, we have many, people have many awakenings in the dream, but there are very few, maybe only one, which would be Jesus' example perhaps, that has fully awoken from the dream. And maybe that's, you know, who knows. So does that,
at least you didn't attack me.
So, yeah. No, oh gosh, no.
Yeah, because I do, I mean, I feel that everyone is, we're all love, so I do what I can. I realize that I cannot change the world. I have to change the cause, which is me, but I can make donations. I can help another brother. Mm-hmm. But you brought up another question I was going to ask, and that is, someone, Gary Reynard, said that we all, and I've wondered about this, we can have awakenings in the dream, but he said that everyone has a particular time, and I know that people like Byron Katie, other teachers have said this, is that we must wait for our time for full awakening. We'll all the sonship will awaken. But my question is he said that, Gary Reynard said that we all have a specific time that the Holy Spirit knows will be awakened.
Mm-hmm.
What's people's take on that? Really fully awakened, like spontaneous awakening, people that have, you know, and I do believe that there are people, I've met saints in India that are fully awakened beings.
Mm-hmm.
So there are people on our planet that have awoken from the dream, and they're quite ordinary. Once you wake up, you're quite ordinary. There's no mind there. You're not a vegetable, but you're not run by the ego at all.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's only a little bit of ego left inside of you. I have met saints, I have met people like these.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is why is it that some people are waking up fully, and why are those of us who are struggling, you know, to still wake up fully?
Uh-huh.
And
uh-huh.
Is there a timetable for that for each of us?
Well, the Course does say that it is guaranteed that we will wake up, and it does, I believe it does say that the time has already been set, because again, everything that we seem to be going through right now is over. It's been, you know, long done, and it's just like we keep looking back, rehashing a memory of what's gone by and experiencing that memory as if it's in the now. So it does say that the time has been already set, but in my feeling, and in my experience too, it's that we have an active part to play, and sitting by, just sort of waiting for that time to come on its own. I very much feel there's, at least again, and I'm only speaking from my experience, that I feel that I have much more of an active part to play than just to sit by and wait, if that, you know, makes sense, because it's my part to look at all of the blocks that I've interposed between love and my awareness of love's presence. So, and the Course says also, too, that just as the separation happened over millions of years, so will the, I think the last judgment is what it refers to, which is, you know, the undoing of all this could, you know, seemingly occur over an equally long period of time. So it's a gradual, gentle thing, but the Course does also reference too that the time has already been set. So again, I don't think I'm totally answering your question very directly. But.
No, you are, because there isn't really a direct, you know, you are,
mm-hmm.
because no one really knows when the time is. Yeah, it could take,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, but I do sense that more and more people are having spontaneous awakening, or, I mean, there's Eckhart Tolle, there's Byron Katie, and there's lots of, I wouldn't say lots, but some teachers, and the most unlikely people are waking up fully.
Yeah.
I mean, they still have ego in them. I mean, Eckhart still has ego. Byron Katie still has ego. They've not denied that. But when I look at some of these saints, I mean, it's, you know, so I think that there are more now than there was, like, you know, millions of years ago.
Yeah,
so I don't know. But, yeah.
You
but
know,
no,
the
you
interesting
have
thing. I'm just what's coming up for me too is just thinking about Nook Sanchez's teaching, and if anybody on the call, you know, has anything to say about this who's also been reading her book, please jump in. But she talks about too how the Course is pretty uncompromising in that death is the central dream that holds all of this together, and as long as we believe that death is a natural part of life, we won't actually awaken from the dream. We'll awaken in it. We might awaken in it, but we might still end up coming back in another lifetime. Awakening from the dream is, you know, when we don't keep coming back anymore. And so,
What is death? How does the Course define death?
What the Course is saying is that, you know, when it's a laying down of the body. It's the body. It's not from sickness. It's not from old age. Its usefulness is merely, you know, over, and so it's gently laid down. And so her teaching is that her husband, partner, he did leave the body through sickness, and so I believe she teaches that he had an absolute awakening in the dream, but because he left through sickness, he likely didn't awaken from the dream, if that makes sense. So she's sort of taking a very clear stand on, you know, the Course's messages about death and dying, and it being, you know, a laying down of the body rather than sickness, because it does talk a number of times about how the body becomes very healthy and serviceable when we truly, truly put it into, you know, the hands of spirit. So, yeah, those are just some other thoughts. Does anybody else, you know, who's been working with Nook's work have anything to say about that?
There's only one other thing that I thought about adding, because she's very clear in the book that the reason he transitioned the way that he did was to teach her that she could awaken.
Right.
And what's her name, please?
Nook Sanchez.
It's N-O-U-K.
Can you spell the first name?
Mm-hmm. It's N-O-U-K.
Okay. She's British. Okay, okay.
And N-O-U-K and Sanchez is the last name.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, her website is undoingtheego.org with hyphens between all the words. And she's got some really phenomenal blogs up there, too. Let's just read the last paragraph. I think we have just the last paragraph, right? Okay. In many, only the spark remains, for the great rays are obscured. Yet God has kept the spark alive so that the rays can never be completely forgotten. If you but see the little spark, you will learn of the greater light, for the rays are there unseen. Perceiving the spark will heal, but knowing the light will create. Yet in the returning, the little light must be acknowledged first, for the separation was a descent from magnitude to littleness. But the spark is still as pure as the great light because it is the remaining call of creation. Put all your faith in it, and God himself will answer you. Awesome, everybody. Thank you so much for your sharing and contributing and questions. I feel like I want to keep going because I still have some thoughts coming up, but we'll pause there, and if things are relevant, I'll bring them up next week. So thank you all so much. Have a great weekend.
Have a wonderful week.
Thank you, Corinne. Have a good week.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.